So I told you guys before the game that you're the best group that I've ever worked with, the commitment you have to each other, right? And then we showed the video of these last-minute goals. And a group that shows belief, that never says quit, that runs for each other, that fights for each other, that does everything we can. And that, guys, that is what got us here, right? It's the character of you guys, right? I don't stand in front of the fans and hear my name chanted. It's me, it's us. It will always be us, and we f***ing staying in the Premier League, gents.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Football America's live and underway here on ESPN Plus alongside Hercules Gomez. I am Sebastian Salazar. Will a dramatic weekend, Herc, lead to a dramatic show here on Football America's on this Monday? That's the question.
What's he drinking? Some lame pumpkin spice ale out there? What was that?
I don't know. It looked like a red label to me, like a good old-fashioned maybe Budweiser or Bud Diesel. Yeah, that's what Jesse Marsh,
exactly,
the American, should
get
be drinking to celebrate staying up in the Premier League. Look, we got a lot to get to in this show. We got a final set in Liga MX. In fact, according to you, Herc, on Twitter, it is, quote, the final no one wanted. So we'll look ahead to that. Speaking of finals, we got a final in the Women's Champions League to discuss as well. True. Barcelona-Lyon, what a shocker that was over the weekend. Plus, don't look now, but it's Open Cup week. We got 8 games Wednesday, the round of 16, including El Tráfico, LAFC against the LA Galaxy. So we will preview that. But let's start with the struggle for survival. Relegation battles across Europe. We start in the Premier League. Leeds and American manager Jesse Marsh. They went into Sunday in the bottom three. They were away to Brentford and got a game winner late from Jack Harrison, Herc, in the 94th minute.
Of all people, Jack Harrison. Look at Jesse Marsh. Jesse Marsh, who didn't have destiny in his own hands. They needed a few results to go their way. And look at that. Look at that. There you go, you Ted Lasso wannabe.
Jack Harrison, of course, not just with the MLS ties, but with the NCAA ties as well. Herc, kind of how you feel about the college game. Magic for Jesse Marsh and Leeds. 94th minute game winner in the season finale to stay up. That coupled with Burnley's 2-1 defeat against Newcastle. The difference, by the way, they also had some stoppage time magic last week in that draw against Brighton. So what does the final table then, Herc, look like in the Premier League when it is all said and done? We're going down. You got Norwich, Watford, and Burnley. Leeds 17th, staying up. How about it? A beautiful picture for Leeds fans as well as Jesse Marsh. All right, that's the story in England. What about in La Liga, Herc? Mallorca, Mexican manager Javier Aguirre. They needed a win away to Osasuna on the last day of the season to guarantee safety. And boy, did they ever get it. 2 second-half goals, the difference in a 2-0 win, Herc.
Great game, sans the commentary. But this was an amazing game to watch as a neutral. It was something crazy, like 5 points out of 54 possible that Mallorca had been able to get on the road. This was almost mission impossible, Javier Aguirre and Mallorca. I'm extremely pleased for Javier Aguirre and for Steve Nash. Those are the only two people I'm happy for about this situation.
Yep, Mallorca just their third away win all season, their first away win since back in December, and their first win in Pamplona since 2009. So against all sorts of odds, Javier Aguirre and company getting it done. As you mentioned, Herc, they were in control of their own destiny,
yes,
so the win
were.
Gets the job done. Cadiz, it was a crazy day at the bottom of the table in Spain. They stay up after a 1-0 victory over Alaves. Granada tied 0-0 against Espanyol, and Granada missed a penalty kick late in that game, so they're relegated along with Alaves and Levante. All right, Herc, so we got a couple rescue jobs to compare here. Jesse Marsh and El Vasco Aguirre. Which for you was more impressive?
It has to be Jesse Marsh. Now, I love Javier Aguirre, but he's almost made us accustomed to this. I mean, Pachuca, Osasuna, Zaragoza, Espanyol, Mallorca, and a couple times with Mexico for the World Cup. So this is what we're accustomed to. And not only that, but Jesse Marsh is heading into a situation where it's the Premier League. It's the more competitive league. It's the higher bar, if you will. And he's replacing such a beloved figure in Bielsa, Marcelo Bielsa, and everything that kind of encompassed him going in, the xenophobia that came with his Ted Lasso comparisons, the British press, et cetera, et cetera. An injury-riddled team, the whole season that he was there, or his season, I should say, that small body of work, trying to get players fit enough to even compete. Tactical disarray, everything that Bielsa had left his team, and to go into the final match day, not even having your own destiny in your own hands. You had to win out, and you had to hope that somewhere along the lines, other teams faltered, and all that came into fruition, and it happened. By no way am I trying to take away anything that Javier Aguirre has done, but Javier Aguirre goes into a much more comfortable situation. He's almost a darling of the Spanish press. His if you will, sayings, the type of player, the type of player he was, the type of coach he is, how much credit and equity he already has. Jesse Marsh didn't have that going for him. So it's a much more difficult situation for Jesse Marsh.
Okay. What Jesse Marsh did is certainly impressive. It's not more impressive than what Vasco did with Mallorca. I'll tell you why. Let's just look at the dates, right? Aguirre takes over on March 24th. Jesse Marsh takes over on February 28th. So a month that Jesse Marsh had to work with his team during the season that El Vasco Aguirre didn't have. So El Vasco Aguirre, in less time, did more. El Vasco takes over there in 18th. They're in the relegation places. He pulls them to 16th. When Jesse Marsh takes over, they're 16th, and they ended up 17th. Jesse Marsh stopped the bleeding. El Vasco resuscitated a patient. That, for me, is the big difference there.
Did he only win one game?
What's that?
Did he only win one game, the final game?
El Vasco?
Yeah.
No, they took 7 points from their last nine. They won two of their last three.
There you go.
Okay, come on.
That's all fair and good for Javier Aguirre, but you have to take into account the, if you will, level of play. And also, Javier Aguirre had multiple things go his way. Multiple teams falter at the end. Jesse Marsh had one out, and that happened. That played.
The one thing that you talk about, which I think actually is a comfortable situation for Aguirre, I think it wasn't so comfortable. If you look at that lineup that he started yesterday in the decisive game, right? Half of those players are on loan. Some of the big players in that team were brought in January, okay? Those are not guys that were picked by Aguirre. Look at the Leeds team. Those players are there because they play a style. And Jesse Marsh is there because he coaches that style. So he walked into a similar setting that he would have walked into.
Very, very different styles, Sebi. Bielsa and Jesse Marsh are completely different styles. One high presses, the other man marks all over the field. Very contrasting styles. And Jesse Marsh comes into a team that you mentioned bleeding. They were on one leg. They were trying to recuperate players all season while Jesse Marsh was there. Both very difficult situations, but by no means did he pick his team.
Both impressive rescue jobs and both redemption jobs for these guys as well, right? El Vasco coming off.
Oh, yeah.
Rayados for true. Jesse Marsh coming off his struggles in Germany. And even for El Vasco going back, right? He had a very similar situation 2 years ago. Leganés, last day, couldn't keep him up.
Sold all his players that year, too.
There you go. This time he gets the job done. Now, Leeds staying up means they got some money, right? They got some money to spend for next year. Now, what are they going to do with that money? Ah, that takes us to our next story here on Football Americas. That's right. Multiple reports Sunday. First from Tom Bogert. That's the first one I saw. Then Fabrizio Romano. That Leeds will buy U.S. midfielder Brendan Aaronson from Red Bull Salzburg for $29.5 million. Herc, that's coming from our Jeff Carlisle. Coming from Taylor Twellman, Philadelphia Union going to get a sell-on fee of about $5 million. This obviously would mean Aaronson going to reunite with Jesse Marsh. He's been at Salzburg for 14 months. He's 21 years old. Is he ready, Herc, for a big money move to the Premier League?
You know what? It's funny because when you ask this question, is he ready for the Premier League? The first thing that comes into the mind of anybody is physical capabilities, right? Can he acclimate to the physicality of the Premier League? This cliche. That's not the case with Brendan Aaronson. Brendan Aaronson, who's technically sound, has the physical attributes, has the speed of play, both physically and speed of thought, to compete in the Premier League. My question is the maturity to deal with the attention and the expectations you will get within the Premier League, and that's going to be something different for him to handle. But if I had to bet on any U.S. men's national team player in that pool fighting their way into the hearts of any team, any fan base in the Premier League, it's this player. It's Brandon Aaronson. It's Football America's, Mr. Football America's, because of the type of player he is. He doesn't strike me as this type of modern player who's more interested in what he wears, what kind of car he drives, who he's seen with. This player really is a pure love for the game type of player, and a player I think does anything, will do anything to fit into that system and succeed, and I could honestly see it happening.
He's not just Mr. Football Americas, huh? He's Mr. Run It Back, because specifically that's when he started to pop, right? Like every single week we would see it. So to the question, is he ready? I think he's proven it. If you're getting a goal, if you're getting an assist every week, every other week, you're being productive. You need to be challenged at another level. So I think Brendan Aaronson is pretty clearly here ready for the jump to the Premier League. My questions aren't really so much about Brendan Aaronson, Herc. They're more a little bit about Leeds and specifically this situation, because you could look at it, you say, it's ideal, right? It's a manager who knows you, Jesse Marsh, bringing you in. You can also look at it, and you just talked about how the media treated Americans, specifically Jesse Marsh. So you're now going to have an American big money signing under an American manager on a team that's American-owned and probably by next year going to be even a bigger percentage American-owned. They better not get off to a slow start, because you know who they're going to blame, right?
Absolutely. And he's going to be one of those Marsh players, like we've seen oftentimes in other places. Sergio Dresden Koeman, Ronald Koeman, he ended up being a Ronald Koeman guy. So when things went awry, he was one of the first players to blame. That's going to go with Brendan Aaronson as well. But I think he can manage these expectations. And listen, for Jesse Marsh, there are no excuses. You had the excuse of, this isn't my team. I came here in a bandit situation, stopped the bleeding, helped this team stay afloat. Now you've done that. Now you will have a situation to put out your own team, make your own signings, and this is a big one for you.
Yeah, final thought on Aaronson. Sure, what he does in the Austrian Bundesliga is impressive, right? We saw it every week here on Run It Back. I think you remember what he did against Bayern Munich, right? In the Champions League. When you saw him in that level, you said, okay, this guy's ready for something else.
Good
if that
show.
Something else is the Premier League and Leeds, boy, would it be exciting. So Leeds survives the drop, but not everybody else hurt so fortunate. Here's a list of CONCACAF players relegated from the Big Five leagues, right? We couldn't do everybody, but we should probably note as well, Luca Della Torre not on this list. He is going down with Heracles, or at least his club is going down, Heracles, in Holland.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Miazga, Oscar Duarte, Josh Sargent, you almost expected that. Johan Vasquez was one of the top four statistical center backs in all Serie A. Some of these players will make their way up. Some of these players, listen to this, will actually benefit from going down. They will get more minutes. They will be more productive. It'll be better for their development. Relegation isn't always a negative sometimes for these players.
Johan Vasquez and Genoa going down in Italy. Venezia going down as well. Wasn't all bad news. Tyler Adams and RB Leipzig, they won the German Cup over the weekend in penalties over Freiburg. Adams didn't start, Herc, but he did enter the match in the 99th minute.
It's his first club trophy, if I'm not mistaken. I am not going to count the supporter shield.
Ah, boo!
I am not going to count USL when he won with Red Bulls 2. This is his first club trophy at the senior club level. And it's a big one. Congratulations to Tyler Adams and RB Leipzig.
I mean, look at you just devaluating not just the supporter shield, the USL title. Unbelievable. He is a serial winner. He's won in a lot of places. We should at least acknowledge that. Who knows? Maybe this is the end of his time at Leipzig. We've heard him linked to a couple other teams, one of them being Leeds under Jesse Marsh. Here's your trophy haul for U.S. men's national team eligible players on the European circuit. Herc, not quite as many as last year, but still a good number.
Yeah, and that's just the top five leagues. It's a very good number. And going back to Tyler Adams, they were semifinalists in the Europa League, fourth place in Bundesliga. So Leipzig with quite a comeback story after Jesse Marsh.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's transition to the women's game. Women's Champions League final on Saturday. Barcelona against Lyon. Two Americans in the starting 11 for Lyon, and they got off to a great start. Amandine Henry in the six-minute hurt.
This is just a ridiculous goal. Look at the distance. Look at the band. Look where she puts it. Insane goal.
Lyon weren't done. They got off to a great start. Ada Hegerberg.
I mean, the atmosphere is just electric. They're feeding off of this atmosphere. Back door, goalkeeper can't close out on time. Diving header, that's two.
All right, let's get one of these Americans involved in the highlight, shall we? Katerina Macario with a tap-in to make it 3-0.
Yeah, defensive error right there. I mean, Barcelona, you wouldn't have pegged this from this Barcelona team. Katerina taking advantage of that.
Alexia Putellas getting one back in the 41st minute. She'd be named Champions League Player of the Season on Monday. But in the end, Lyon, just too much. They win 3-1. Let's hear from Katerina Macario after the match.
Well, I'm very happy, obviously. It was a big match. Barcelona was incredible. But I'm just really happy that we were able to start the game so well. Those three goals in the first half really helped. I think it just came out, you know, just we were the team that showed up the most today and we had the most experience. So thankfully we were able to come out on top.
Macario and Horan then joining the relatively short list of U.S. Women's National Team players to have won a Women's Champions League title. Five now on the list as Macario and Horan join Morgan Lewandowski and Ali Krieger back in the day. It's impressive, Herc, surely. But is it more impressive than winning an NWSL title? Herc, what say you?
Absolutely it is. Did you just see that crowd for the mm-hmm. Women's Champions League mm-hmm. final? Mm-hmm. I didn't see that crowd in the NWSL final, the Spirit versus Stars. I didn't see that crowd in the Challenge Cup final. Very scarce crowd. Sheer attention that you have there. You could see the importance. And also, there is no salary cap in mm-hmm. the Women's Champions mm-hmm. League. You can have these teams. You can have. And maybe some would say, well, that means that it's more competitive in NWSL. Fine. Maybe it's more concentrated at the top, but still, you have to beat the players at the top. You have to beat these super teams like Lyon. You have to beat a historic team like Barcelona. You can say it's concentrated, but it's still very much in the favor of the Women's Champions League. I just don't see where we go from here. NWSL, because of that, I guess, spreading of the wealth, you get sometimes not these super clubs like you may have in the Women's Champions League. So it makes it, I guess, an easier road to get to.
Yeah, so we made it more impressive. We should have made it tougher. Because to me, when I think, what's more impressive is what was tougher, not necessarily the size of the crowd, though I get the points that you're making. They're totally valid. So let me defend the NWSL here. First of all, as far as the Champions League is concerned, the new format helps. It definitely helps. It's definitely tougher and more interesting. But the tournament doesn't really kick in, Herc, until the last date.
Right.
Really until the quarterfinal round. Even if you go back to the group phases this year, you see the PSG, you see Lyon, you see Barcelona,
8-0.
Their scores. They're winning 4-5-0. They're rolling teams. There's no competition there. In the NWSL, there is that grind, that competition every single week. And you got to survive a long regular season just to get into the playoffs, just to have a shot at the NWSL title. You know, if you're a super team, if you're a Lyon, a PSG, if you're Barcelona, you're dominating your league. So in that regard, for me, the toughness of what you got to go through to really be in an NWSL final, to me, that's more impressive.
Yeah, is it though? You saw the Spirit falter like halfway through last year's NWSL regular season and then just roll right through into the playoffs and they were the hottest team. You look at the other side, and I just mentioned there was no salary cap. Why isn't a Lindsey Horan playing in the NWSL? Because more money attracts more talent. More talent concentrated would be a higher level. So, I don't know. Impressive. I like the collection of stars. I like thinking about the Champions League knockout-style tournaments. One bad game could mean it. I mean, you just saw Barcelona. We've been talking about Barcelona for about a year and a half, how historic, how good they've been. And in one game, that went all down the drain because Lyon has a super team.
You know what this tells me, Herc? We need a club world championship. FIFA can, like, trips over themselves at every corner to try and squeeze any last dime out of the men's club game. It's sitting there for you in the women's club game. If you gave us Barcelona and Lyon against Portland and OL Reign or Washington Spirit, we would eat that up. That's what I know every time I see the Women's Champions League final. I want to see NWSL's best against the best in the world. And right now, we don't really have a format that delivers us that. Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future. Let's run it back with some of the best performance from players in the U.S. Women's National Team pool. Alex Morgan, her sixth goal, Herc, in the last five games as a San Diego Wave beat North Carolina Courage 1-0.
I don't know what's more impressive, that Alex Morgan at her age right now is the early and obvious front runner for MVP of the season, that she's never won an NWSL, or that the San Diego Wave, a first-year team, is in first place. I don't know what's more impressive.
Yep. They're both impressive. She doesn't have it on her mantle yet, but that NWSL MVP, Alex Morgan, definitely your clubhouse early season leader. Kristen Press doesn't score a goal, but creates a goal as Angel City beats Kansas City 1-0 on Saturday.
Kristen Press, you had her as number one in your winger depth chart. I'll tell you what, maybe Angel City isn't known for being an offensive team, but they are the best defensive team in the league, and they are also very much a surprising team early on. The two first-year teams are 1-2 in the league. This blows my mind.
Yep. Good start for the expansion crews. Press, of course, scoring her first regular season goal last week. That golazo we showed you. Mallory Pugh, two goals and an assist in Chicago's 4-2 win over Orlando.
I sometimes forget how young Mallory Pugh is because it feels like she's been around forever. I mean, 2016, we saw her with the national team for the first time. She's only 24 years old, Seb. This blows my mind.
Mallory Pugh getting it done. Tapping home the rebound from the penalty spot. Chicago Red Stars with a victory over Orlando. 4-2, the final score in that one. Liga MX Femenil. First leg of the final between Pachuca and Chivas on Friday. What a game, Herc. 27th minute, Viridiana Salazar puts Pachuca up 1-0. Chivas equalized through Gabriela Valenzuela.
I mean, it's just good goal, both goals. And look at Charlene Corral. This is a good finish. Left foot being strong on the run. Good finish.
Yeah, Pachuca up 2-1 there through Ocampo. Carlina Jaramillo makes it 2-2 Chivas here.
Uh-oh. And then, penalty kick.
You know what's coming then. Alicia Cervantes with not one, but two, as Chivas win 4-2. Second leg tonight, we'll have full coverage and reaction on Thursday's Football Americas. We're also looking ahead to the U.S. Women's National Team against Colombia. I know it's a while away. June 28th on ESPN, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Pacific. Big, big tune-up there before World Cup and Olympic qualifying.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, the Liga MX, Tigres, Atlas, semifinals. First leg went 3-0 Atlas. Late first half, Atlas going up 4-0 on aggregate through Julian Quiñones.
It's a good early ball from Hueso Reyes right there onto the oncoming path of Quiñones. Quiñones looks like he's slipping. Didn't slip enough. Good goal.
So Gignac may be guilty of an elbow here at halftime. Miguel Herrera made a sub that got him in some hot water. I'll explain the rest after, but let's hear from Piojo first.
Error mío, completamente desconcentración, el estar pensando en los goles. Ya tenía yo el cambio en la cabeza y Hugo vino y me dijo que no podía más, que le dolía mucho la espalda de un golpe. Y no me di cuenta. Responsabilidad 100% mía.
So Florian Tavan, the player that came on, Hugo Ayala off. That means not enough Mexican players for Liga MX rules. That means trouble, but we'll get to that later. Gignac stepping up. What'd you think? Was that a penalty, Herc?
Oh, man. I didn't think it was a penalty, but it doesn't matter what I think. Gignac will bury that. He's looking good. How good? Look at this finish, Seb. Number two for APG 10.
Yeah, this game started to take on a life of its own. In the second half, 67th minute, refs reviewing a possible penalty.
Yeah, hand on the back. What do you want, my man?
Cesar Ramos says, not today.
Come on, man. This, I was more of a penalty than that one, by the way.
That's right. Well, Cesar Ramos does say this is a penalty.
That's insane to me. I mean, where do you want to go with it? This has been the story of the Liguilla, the playoffs, all season.
Yep, so Gignac steps up from the spot, makes it 3-1. At least Cesar Ramos isn't representing Mexico in like a big tournament like the World Cup or anything, though.
Oh, I see what you did there. Okay.
All right, 3-1, 81st minute. What? Let's make it
4-1. Lichnowsky, there he is. Lichnowsky. It's about time. 4-1. The miracle has happened. No, wow. Angulo, don't do that.
Jesus Angulo brings Donaldo Rocha. Cesar Ramos says, penalty.
Look at this.
Noel's crying.
He's crying. My man is such a showman. He is crying.
Are you saying those weren't real tears?
Maybe. Crocodile.
Real pressure there for Aldo Rocha, but he steps up and converts. Gives Atlas the lead. All right, so Erk, a lot to unpack from that game, but really the incident around the substitution kind of invalidates what happened in the second half. So I feel like we got to start there. Let's start with the fault first. We heard from Piojo Herrera. Who are you blaming?
I guess Miguel Herrera, but like, should this really be on Miguel Herrera? Should it really be on the coach? And let me just explain myself for a second. Mm-hmm. Bear with me for a second. How stupid is it? How dumb is it that he can't use who's at his disposal on the bench? Think about any other league in the world. Think about any other sport in the world. If he's on the bench, you can use him. You don't have to say, wait a second, is he Mexican? Is he developed in Mexico? Is there a caveat or an asterisk for this player? Should I be able to use him or not? How dumb is this getting? Either you can have a certain amount of foreigners that make the game day roster and they're there and you can use them, or you can't. It's ridiculous, and I'm surprised that this is the first time this has happened. Now, I don't blame the guy, okay? He's got a substitution in his mind, and all of a sudden, his center back, a Mexican player, has to go out because he's got back spasms. He's not fit. So he thinks, okay, how can I make my team better? And he looks down the bench, and he's thinking about how to win the game in a game that nobody thought would be that way. Nobody thought they'd have a chance in. They're 3 goals down, and they make it interesting against the defending champions, and he picks a player from the bench. Said player goes on the field, and all of a sudden, you're like, wait a second, we got a problem. Too many foreigners on the field. It blows my mind. So I wish it was as easy as saying this is on Piojo, but I don't really think it is.
Yeah, it's certainly on Piojo, but can you imagine the egg on the face of forget Tigres and Piojo, the league, if Tigres had won, they're bailed out by the fact that Atlas gets that penalty. Because if Tigres wins and then we got to go back, it's a mess. So whatever we're going to blame Piojo and Tigres, and there probably should and will be some punishment, the league must today, absolutely 100%, to avoid a catastrophe in the future, change its protocols around this and take ownership. If it's not the fourth official, it can be a fifth league official, sixth league official. You got to have a body there to make sure. Now, as far as punishment is involved, what do you think should go down here? Should Piojo be suspended? Should there be a fine? What should happen here? Piojo or for Tigres?
I think a fine would be justified, but I agree with you. Would be major egg on the face. Could you imagine one of the biggest clubs in Mexico advancing from the semifinals to the final and what was the game in this miraculous comeback, and then on paper they take the game away from them? It would be international egg on the face. It would be controversy. It would be in papers all around the world. Look what happened in this league, and Mexican soccer would be in the world stage, would be on the world stage in the press everywhere for the wrong reason. So I'm glad that didn't happen, but there has to be a change. As far as what should happen, I think a fine is would suffice here. I don't know if you can give Miguel Herrera a suspension and make it really interesting there.
All right, let me go conspiracy theory real quick on you here. Miguel Herrera's never had a problem with this rule before.
Nobody has.
He's down. He hasn't forgotten before. He's down 4-0. It's basically over. Why not just...
Because you won't get away with it, Seb.
You're telling me it was totally innocent. Totally innocent?
Seb, if you're down, honestly, 4-0 in like 10 minutes left, then okay, nobody catches it, nothing happens. All right, but you're not, and you're still very much in this game by the way the game is being played. Honestly, Seb, what do you gain from it? Mm-hmm. Think about this, Seb. What can you? You're not going to get away with it. So why do it? I don't buy the conspiracy theory. I know there are those conspiracy theorists out there. I don't for one second buy it.
Yeah. Finally, you are critical, Herc, of the rule. That rule is in place, in theory, to get more Mexican players minutes to support the national team. Conversation for another day. But if you're going to take that rule away, what do you do to get those guys those minutes, right?
So there's a point to the rule. Limits, Seb. You don't say formed in Mexico. You don't say on the game day roster. You don't say at the field at one time. You just reduce it. When I played in Liga MX, it was 5 foreigners. That's it.
Boom. Okay, when you played in Liga MX, one of the stops that you made was Pachuca. They played America in the second leg of their semifinal on Sunday. First leg finished up 1-1. Pick this one up. Ooh, early on.
Oh, no.
Eric Sanchez giving away the ball to Diego Valdez.
If we only had a 9.
America had chances in the first half of this game, first half of last game. Come on.
I mean, Valdez isn't a 9. He's not a forward, but he should have finished it like a 9. He didn't, though.
Richard Sanchez with a shot here. Ustari laying out.
Oh, Ustari's a ridiculous save. But then from bad to worse, it's Aviles Hurtado to Romario Ibarra. Remember him? Minnesota United player? Look at that nice little goal.
Boom, and right there, Pachuca takes the 1-0 lead, 2-1 on aggregate. Controversy here. Richard Sanchez getting stamped from behind by Nico Ibanez. At first to yellow, VAR said take another look.
Yeah, no controversy. Should have been a red. No
what about
controversy
this one?
There. Should have been a red.
There you go. So the inconsistent refereeing is, I guess, consistently bad?
Yeah, that's about right.
Eric Sanchez, golazo from distance. Was Memo slow to this?
Nah, he got screened, couldn't see it. The Pachuca altitude thin air, and then look at this, number 2. This is a sweet little finish, and it got just from bad to worse. A Paco Memo! And we're not going to show you the rest of the shots that went off Paco's back and off the post, because that'd just be... Oh, we are going to show you those shots. Here you go.
Pocho Guzman with a great assist there to Ibarra. There's a save for Memo. 3-0 on the day. 4-1 on aggregate. America goes down. All right, so the talk around America right now is that, let's see, Tano Ortiz is all but official. But the talk in Mexico right now is that maybe Las Águilas should reconsider Herc, the hiring of their interim manager based on the so-called fracaso of the weekend, losing 3-0 to Pachuca. So tell me, should America rethink it?
Yes or no? Was this a fracaso?
No. Okay. Let me ask you yes or no's. I run the show. You let me ask you some yes or no's. Is Pachuca better than America?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Is America's roster top 2 in the league?
Neither is Pachuca's.
No. I'm asking, is America's roster top 2 in the league?
No.
Okay, so semifinals is their station then.
Is America the biggest club in Mexico?
Semifinals is their station.
Is America the biggest club in Mexico?
Yes. On history, yes. On titles, yes.
Okay.
You just told me they're not a big spender.
Okay, hold on. Seb, let me... this is a humiliating fracaso. To add to it. Not just a fracaso, a humiliating fracaso. And I am very surprised you as an Americanista don't recognize that. Now, our colleague, Gibran Araige, who works for TUDN, who's very much in the know and in the scene right there, has pretty much all but confirmed that Tano Ortiz will be made official soon with Club America. They should reconsider that. And I've been against Tano Ortiz with his small body of work being named head coach. Solari, in a larger body of work, did more impressive things with Club America. Now, let me talk to you really quick about
Tano Ortiz. Yeah, all those Liguilla wins. Tell me about all the Liguilla wins he had.
Tell me about Tano Ortiz.
Tano Ortiz has more Liguilla wins than Solari.
He's got 1 Liguilla win.
Oh, okay. Still.
So let me tell you about this 1 Liguilla win. Let me tell you about Tano Ortiz's time, with Club America. When he takes Club America over, fecha 9, week 9, they are last place in the league, but they're still only 2 points from repechaje, 2 points from a wild card. He then goes on 5-game winning streak, where the only team of note that he beats, the only team that you could honestly say is a good team, a team of peso, is Tigres, a Tigres team that was starting to go on the decline. He beats them convincingly, but then plays a team in Puebla in Liguilla that hadn't won in 9 games and almost bottles that one up. Then plays a real test, a true test in Pachuca, and boy, was it humiliating. This 3-0 scoreline in the second leg, was not indicative of how this game went. I mean, they were clearly beat on all facets of this game. This could have been a 6-0 scoreline. It was one of the most humiliating games I've seen from Club America in quite some time. And if you don't think Americanistas are trying to rethink or re-go on this decision, you're crazy. The majority, and it's so split. I've been sending you things all day. It's a split decision right now between Americanistas, and I think it's a right call for them to question this.
John Sutcliffe, our colleague, just a few hours ago confirming that Ortiz will be staying at Club America. So if John says it, then we'll tell it to you here on Football America.
Good news for Chivas fans.
Come on. Look, you want to reconsider, but like, how can I really reconsider if you're not going to give me names? All I can really think of right now is profile. So what are the profiles that they would pick? Like a Liga MX retread? Give me a name. If you're just going to tell me a Liga MX retread, I don't really want that. You're going to give me somebody new? Somebody without Liga MX experience? All right, they just tried that with Solari. That clearly didn't work. Meanwhile, I got a guy here who knows the club, knows the league, and has had success with this group. What more do you want?
Success, says the Americanista. Tuca Ferretti's name has been tossed around. Marcelo Bielsa is a name that's been tossed around and has even been in that circle before. I think there are a good amount of, just because it's Club America, that would be attracted to the job. So this whole who, I think you could say for majority teams, but not for America.
Going from last to top four is
last,
yes, that's a
place.
Success.
You were 2 points out of wild
that's
card.
That's a success.
These new age America fans are the problem. These Zoomer America fans are the problem. You guys are the problem.
All right, let's stop talking about the teams that lost, America and Tigres, and talk about the teams that won and the final that nobody wants. Atlas against Pachuca. First leg on Thursday. Herc, time for a little book it. What's your bet?
You conveniently leave out the high-level game we deserve of my tweet in your final nobody wants. I'm going to go draw without goals because, obviously, it just pays so well. I mean, plus 650. And you know how finals are, Seb, especially first-leg affairs. They're cagey, they're tense, they're very defensive. And this clash of styles, I don't know if it's conducive for the neutral. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of goals, especially in this first leg. You're talking about a Atlas team that's very much defend first, very much pragmatic approach, very much will try to break you on the counter and see if we can do something, and we're not going to take too many risks, versus Pachuca, who's the best defensive team in the league, and they're a high press team. I don't know what we're going to get with this clash of styles. All I do know is finals tell us that they're tense, they're low scoring affairs, especially leg one, and plus 650, just the way it pays out, I like that bet, so I'm going to take it.
After the semifinals, especially the second legs this weekend, a game with no goals is hard to envision, Herc.
But
I like that payout right there at plus 650. I've gone down a similar road for my bet, not quite as ambitious. I'm going for a draw. You know my rules. It's the first leg of the final.
Yep.
Take the draw and the under. You can get them here combined, draw and under 2.5 goals at plus 245. You know I love that. I'm smashing that every time. And I guess from what you're saying, you don't hate it either.
No, you're also talking about two probably of the best goalkeepers in Liga MX in each goal. So I like the under here, and I like the draw a lot. You've seen so many finals. These are cagey affairs. They're tense. I think this is good money here.
Hey, real quick, we will be on Thursday. So the next time people will see us will be Monday after the second leg, which takes place on Sunday. So we got to make some picks overall. Who do you think is really going to win it all?
We do got to make some picks.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Pachuca. It's just so much talent. Offensively, they're one of the highest scoring teams. Defensively, they're the best defensive team. They're well coached. Anytime you have a nine who is in that moment, like Nico Ibanez, I think it's very difficult, very tough to beat. They're just going to create so much from wing play in the final third. I got to go with them.
Contractually, we are usually obligated to disagree on this show, but I got to agree with you there. After what Pachuca did to my America, I think they are the best team in Mexican soccer, and it would be special to see Atlas do it again. But yeah, it seems like it is very much Pachuca's turn. All right, let's move on. We'll run it back. El Tri style. Raul Jimenez with an assist as Wolves gave Liverpool a little bit of a scare early on Sunday. Finished 3-1 Liverpool, but still, maybe Raul's last game with Wolves, Herc.
Yeah, I think so. Six goals not exactly tearing it up in the goal scoring department. He's much more of a creator, but that's only his fourth assist. It's very much been a down year for Raul. Hopefully he can get back on track.
Yeah, good service. Fourth Premier League assist of the season. In Spain, Néstor Araujo, this isn't good. An own goal for Celta Vigo in their 2-0 loss against Valencia.
Yeah, he's very much such an enigma. He's a player that he's consistently playing, but he's not quite had the best of years for both.
You can say it, he's the Mexican John Brooks.
Wait, you know, that's a good shout, except he actually plays, except he's still getting called up.
Orbelin got into this match in the 70th minute, Celta finishing the season 11th.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
U.S. Men's National Team. Weston McKennie returning to action after his foot injury. He'd been out since February. Got in the 79th minute as Juventus closed out the season with a 2-0 loss against Fiorentina.
My man's Wolverine healed up quick. Now he's getting ready for a summer call-up with the U.S. Men's National Team.
That's right. Juventus on the season, finishing fourth. Good enough to secure Champions League football. Jordan Pifok wins Swiss Super League scoring title. Say that five times fast. 32 appearances, 22 goals this season for young boys.
I believe that's the first U.S. Men's National Team player that's won a goal scoring title in Europe. I believe. Please confirm. Somebody please confirm.
Who is the first to win a scoring title abroad?
Wow. Do your research, homie.
Okay.
Your boy.
Tim Weah, slow start to the season, but finishing strong. Two goals as Lille tied Reims 2-2.
Who'd they tie?
I don't know. Somebody who I'm going to get butchered for a pronunciation over.
Yeah. Good for Timmy Weah, though.
Oh, good for Timmy Weah. Leo finishing 10th then on the season. Greg Berhalter dropping the summer roster for upcoming friendlies in the Nations League on Friday. Christian Pulisic is in, as you mentioned, Weston McKennie as well. 27 players total. 19 of them were part of the World Cup qualifying effort. Real quick, let me read you the guys who were injured and not here because of injury. Serginho Dest, Miles Robinson, Gio Reyna, Josh Sargent, Jordan Pifok, Daryl Dike, Chris Richards. Anybody else who's not on this roster, they're not on it because of the coaches' decisions. One of the guys who falls into that category is John Brooks. Here's Greg Berhalter last week.
In terms of John, him going to a new club doesn't preclude him from this roster. My point was we're going to be able to see him now in his new environment, hopefully doing things that are similar to what we need him to do, and that could help him make a case to be on the roster. I've always said to you guys that we don't rule any player out permanently. You know, that's just not how we work. You know, even in the case when Jeff's asking about John Brooks, like, trust me, he's not out permanently. That's not our idea. The idea is we want players that can fit our game model, that can play in our game model, and can make us better.
All right, Herc, let's talk snubs. Who's the biggest one on this list or left off this list for you, and why do I have a feeling it's John Brooks?
It's John Brooks. Let's just stop making excuses as to why John Brooks isn't on the U.S. men's national team roster. It seems like every time there's a call-up, he's not there. What's the new excuse? It's John Brooks needs to be better with this club team. It's John Brooks needs to work on things we've told him to work on. It's John Brooks isn't on here because I want to see this player. I know what John Brooks offers me. And now this. It seems like there's always an excuse as to why John Brooks can't make your national team. And now you're in a crisis. The U.S. men's national team is in a center back crisis. You can't mince words. That's what it is. And Miles Robinson, who was a de facto starter on your U.S. men's national team, is quite possibly out for the World Cup. We don't know when he will come back. Chris Richards is often injured. Mark McKenzie doesn't play. Walker Zimmerman may be your only player there. Cameron Carter-Vickers has no experience with this U.S. men's national team. Eric Palmer-Brown, very little as well. There happens to be a player that has a wealth of experience, European pedigree experience in the Bundesliga, who at one point was the highest transfer for any American in the world, who happened to score a goal in a World Cup, has World Cup experience. Aaron Long's coming back from a torn Achilles tendon and hasn't played much this season, and you're still talking about other players. Just don't make excuses as to why John Brooks isn't part of this. Let's just stop making the excuses. Give John Brooks an opportunity. Let people see him fail, or let people see him succeed, or say what it really is.
Yeah, it is a snub. I don't know that it's much of a surprise anymore, right? And I get it. We're always, when we talk about Brooks, we're always talking about the reasons that Berhalter's giving. One thing I would love for somebody to ever use in a defense of John Brooks is how he's actually playing. Somebody who could be, hey, he played very, very well for Wolfsburg. If you're watching the Bundesliga every week and that's your take, fine. Or point to how he's played for the U.S. national team. I never hear anybody talking about the first half against Canada or his performance against El Salvador. Nobody
that's
ever
a lie.
Talks.
That's a
nobody
lie
ever
that's
talks about
one of the
performances.
Things I told you. That's actually one of the things, one of the reasons I believe there is that rift between Greg Berhalter and John Brooks. Because in that first half, he played poorly. In that first half, he was also visibly seen questioning Greg Berhalter and his tactics. That, to me, is the rift between them two. I don't have any proof of that, but based off everything I've seen, that would lead me to believe.
So Berhalter talked specifically about John Brooks. He was obviously asked about it by the media in that press conference. He also heard name-checked three other guys who weren't injured but were left off this roster to give them a chance to recover from their time in Europe. Ricardo Pepi, Gianluca Busio, and James Sands. Now, if I'm not injured and it's a World Cup year, I don't know that I really want time to recover. Certainly not if I'm Ricardo Pepi. So if we're going to talk snubs here, I think we got to talk a little bit Pepi. He's left off here. Berhalter had kind of warned us that this might come. But man, those World Cup odds for Pepi right now are not looking good.
I mean, Seb, would you have guessed this when
no.
we're talking about Ricardo Pepi on fire for FC Dallas? I mean, it was Jurgen Klinsmann on this show who said, be careful what you wish for. Be careful where you go. Maybe the timing isn't at its best. And now we're talking about Ricardo Pepi. Think about this. May not be a possibility to even make the roster in the World Cup. Like, think about this for a second. If you're Ricardo Pepi, you want to be on this roster. You may not need to be on this roster. You may actually need a break. You may need to be mentally refreshed. But you want to be here. You want to prove yourself. And I think that's damning to Ricardo Pepi.
All right. So we will see what happens with Ricardo Pepi, not just in terms of the national team, but also his club future. Will it be another season at Augsburg for the young American? All right, so we got some new names, relatively new on this roster as well, guys who weren't really huge parts of the World Cup qualifying effort. Cameron Carter-Vickers, Jordi Mihailovic, Joe Scally, Malik Tillman plays for Bayern Munich, just committed to the U.S. over Germany, and Haji Wright, who we've been talking about a lot on this show for all of his exploits in Turkey. Herc, as we look at that list, who on that list do you think has right now the best shot of making the World Cup team for Qatar?
Haji Wright. Now bear with me, okay? I look at these names. I look at a Cameron Carter-Vickers, a Jordi Mihailovic. I look at a Joe Scally. I look at a Malik Tillman. They're all gonna be fighting somewhere along the lines of being fringe players on a depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're probably not gonna be Sergiño Dest if you're Joe Scally. You're probably not gonna beat out a healthy Giovanni Reyna if you're Malik Tillman, or if you're Jordi Mihailovic, he's playing in the midfield, or if it's Weston McKennie or Yunus Musa in the way the U.S. men's national team plays. But if you're Haji Wright, like, I have no idea who the starting number nine is going to be in Qatar. You may actually not only fight for a place on the team, but fight for a starting place in this lineup. You may actually be the starting number nine come Qatar, and you're a player who's very familiar with this U.S. men's national team setup in terms of the players. You've played youth national teams with some of these players, a lot of these players, so it's not unfamiliar to you. It's a position that's so taboo right now. If I had to peg one guy that I could not only make the team, and if you're a hot hand as a forward, that is very important, trust me, take it from me, you may have a shot at starting a game in the World Cup.
Hey, what about Tillman, the player for Bayern Munich? Zero caps, what percentage chance are you giving him of making the team for Qatar?
If I had to pick a percentage, I mean, I'd go with a 60% chance at least.
60? 60?
At least. Because if I'm Malik Tillman, especially the reports we've been hearing out of Germany, how disappointed they are to lose him, how they saw him in the setup, how they thought he was going to be part of that program, I have to assume, as a pundit on this side of the pond, that there was a conversation, and a very strong one at that, that assured Tillman that he's got realistic possibilities of being a big part of this national team for him to switch allegiances. Excuse me. So I'd say there are strong possibilities that he makes that team in Qatar.
Wow. 60% Tillman to make the team in Qatar, Herc. Never, ever say that this man will not go out on a limb. That's what he does here on Football Americas. One more thing, Herc, and it comes from social media. You were stalking Christian Pulisic on Instagram this weekend, threw it in the WhatsApp group, and you noticed that Pulisic took Chelsea FC out of his bio. Actually, shout out to our friends USMNT Only. They're the ones that really noticed it over on Instagram. Pulisic, by the way, didn't play in the season finale against Watford. Herc, is the change in the bio on Insta something, nothing, or everything?
Well, it's not nothing, I'll tell you that much. It's definitely something. I can't say it's everything because of the player himself says it, or the club says it first, that he's gone, then it'll be everything. But it's definitely something. I mean, whether it's Mark Pulisic, his father, and those cryptic tweets, whether it's his Christian Pulisic's lack of playing time or his lack of finishing ability, and Thomas Tuchel's comments post-game about lack of finishing ability, there's been a circus surrounding Christian Pulisic. There's been a circus surrounding Chelsea. There's been just an enormous amount of buildup and talk about him needing to leave, so much so that there have been reports out of England that the player, Christian Pulisic himself, has asked to leave Chelsea. Now this is definitely something, Seb. We can't ignore this.
Yeah. If everything means a sign that he's going to leave Chelsea, then I got to be honest at this point, then, Herc, I do think that it's everything. This is a public and intentional distancing of himself from the club. Like, you don't do that on accident. You want to send a message, and you want to send a very strong message, right? What's the point of doing that if you're not leaving?
I've got a real issue saying that's what he did until he does it. I think it's subtle, but players send message, whether subtle or not, out to the public, out to the press. And him doing this may just be voicing displeasure, but until we hear from the player or Chelsea themselves that he's actually leaving. Also, there's a big, big caveat here, a big situation that we need to realize. He was like a $74, $75 million transfer. Chelsea just isn't going to let a player like that go unless they can recuperate something for him.
Right. If we believe that where there's smoke, though, there's fire, there's certainly right now a lot of smoke around this with Christian Pulisic. Real quickly, you know, he had this huge stretch, Herc, where he didn't play, didn't start under Thomas Tuchel. And then in the last 2 weeks, he starts 4 games in 12 days. I thought that was very weird. I brought up some of the reasons why last week. But it almost felt like a forced last chance audition. And I don't know, you know, he didn't play poorly. He had a goal, assist. I think people will mostly remember the missed chances against Liverpool in the FA Cup final. But he didn't necessarily convince. And that, for me, felt like Tuchel kind of saying, hey, you want consistent starts? Here they are. Did he do enough?
No, because Thomas Tuchel's comments in his last game would lead us to believe that he was not pleased at all, and that he pointed and singled out Christian Pulisic's miss because it was a sitter. Let's be honest. We give Christian Pulisic a lot of pass because how we see him being treated by the English press, because of what we see from Thomas Tuchel, because of what we see from him playing in different positions, et cetera, et cetera. But this was a blatant miss. This was a sitter he should have put away, and he didn't. And Thomas Tuchel singled him out as a player that should have put that in the back of the net. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Maybe another chance for Christian Pulisic to find the back of the net for the U.S. men's national team. Their next game, June 1st against Morocco. Match you can catch on ESPN2 Wednesday. Do not miss our wall-to-wall coverage as the U.S. continues their road to Qatar. All right, let's talk some Major League Soccer. Good, bad, and ugly from the weekend that was. Herc, we'll start with FC Dallas. They lost 2-1 against Minnesota, but Paul Arriola scored in his fourth straight game.
Fourth straight game. What was that? 5 goals, 3 assists. DC United's problem, or so we heard that he was a DC United problem. A very good
nobody
player.
Said he was a problem.
Well, that's not what we're hearing. Maybe it wasn't just
what'd you hear? Why don't you report it then, since you heard so much?
Weren't you here for that? I don't think you were here the day that
That's right. I'm sure.
When he was supposed to go to Club America, but Kevin Payne said he didn't want to go, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Now
Kevin
he's
Payne,
been
no
an impact player
for DC
for FC
all.
Dallas.
Right. Definitely. Blame Kevin Payne. Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dave
Kevin
Casper,
Payne apologist.
Dave
DC
Casper.
United apologist.
Dave Casper. The bad, Herc. Just MLS goalies, but not just any old MLS goalies. This is MLS goalies playing out of the back. We'll start with Eloy Room of Columbus.
I mean, what are you doing there? It's also Nagby, but you just don't give him the ball there. Like, what do you got to gain by that? And this is just par for the course.
Yeah, that's more Nagby than Room, right?
Yeah, but how about this? This is Joe Willis. Joe Willis to Marcelo Moreno right there. Thiago Almada will take that one. Joe Willis, come on, man. With a stash like that, you can't make an error like that.
Yeah, Nashville in a 2-2 draw against Atlanta. Joe Willis, formerly of DC United, the guilty party there. And then the Galaxy, Jonathan Bond, former Football America's guest.
Yeah, he's a great guest, too. Hell of a guy, not a hell of a moment. Oh, you can't cop that one up. And it's not an isolated incident. A few of these this year.
The Galaxy featuring in the ugly as well. Really, this should have been the refs. It was that bad of a weekend for the referees across Major League Soccer. But, Herc, you wanted to make it about your former team. The LA Galaxy, who have 1 win in their last 5.
3 losses in the last 5. And this is a team that's a second straight loss at home, getting scored on multiple times. They were booed off the field. And what's worse, they've made Chicharito go cold. That's 7 straight games. Chicharito, no goals. And guess what's coming up, Seb? Guess what's coming up?
El Tráfico.
Open Cup versus El Tráfico. Maybe that cures all.
13 goals for the Galaxy so far this season. Nobody in the Western Conference has less. They are 5th, though, in the Western Conference table. Pro referees. I saw what happened in Portland. I saw what happened in Austin. You escaped for this week because Herc wanted to hate on the Galaxy. But next week we'll get you. Speaking of the Galaxy, as you mentioned, they face off against LAFC, Herc. In the Open Cup, round of 16 on Wednesday. One of quite a few games that you can catch on ESPN+. Time for another Book It. What's your bet?
I'm taking the Los Angeles Galaxy at the money line so that they will win. It's plus 145. Mm-hmm. And you heard me mention that LAFC cures all for the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how bad the Galaxy are playing. How well LAFC are playing. Mm-hmm. When they play against the Galaxy at Dignity Health Sports Park, and I've told you this before, it cures all for the Galaxy. 7 undefeated. They've never lost in their history versus LAFC at Dignity Health Sports Park. 5 wins, 2 draws. And I've got a feeling that Chicharito breaks that slump in this game. I'm taking the Galaxy, who is referred to as Papa in this rivalry, at home.
All right, so you did this last time they played. You said this is what would happen. I didn't listen to you. Am I going to learn my lesson? No. I'm not going to learn my lesson. They're due. LAFC is due to win in Carson. So I'm going to take LAFC at plus 155. By the way, since you hate supporter shields, LAFC, they don't have a major trophy. You want to be a big club, you got to have a major trophy. You always talk about how easy the Open Cup is
I gotta
to win.
I got to document this.
So let's get LAFC at what, plus 155. So a little fatter payout there than your Galaxy bet.
Okay.
I also like the own goal to be scored in this game because you know there's craziness in these matches. Plus 550 on an own goal.
Ooh.
Okay, plus 550 if you want a flyer. Let's take a look at the rest of Wednesday's schedule. 8 games in the round of 16 in the Open Cup. We got a California Derby. We got a Florida Derby. Orlando against Inter Miami. We got Louisville hosting. We got Sacramento Republic hosting. And yes, out of USL League One, the third tier, we got Union Omaha. They actually just sent us jerseys. I just got them in my house. They sent us some cool gear, so I'll get that to you soon. But there are the matchups. Don't miss a single minute of the action on ESPN Plus Wednesday night. Parting shot, Mexican Football Federation extending its partnership, Herc, with the U.S.-based Soccer United Marketing, which of course we know is the commercial and marketing arm of Major League Soccer. The deal will be extended for another 6 years through 2028. Herc, there is lots of interest in this news south of the border. What do you make of it?
So this is interesting for me because, as you know, U.S. Soccer, the U.S. men's national team, also had the same agreement with some. They decided to now do it in-house. So now Mexican Soccer, FMF, will do this for the men and for the women. And I think it means different things for both. This is good news for the women and bad news for the men. Now, let me explain myself. Why is it good news for the women? You need to give these women every single opportunity to have more attention put on their game because they deserve it. More attention will mean more money. A marketing arm like this can suit them and do them better. That's going to be more exposure. That's something they do very well at some. But on the men's side, this means more games in the U.S. This means a team that plays very little in Mexico will now play even less and will be guaranteed to play less in Mexico. This, to me, as a Mexican fan who lives in Mexico, is a slap in the face. This is telling me that the Federation only cares about the dollars. Forget about the pesos. Only los dólares. They don't care about the fan being able to see their team. They don't care about the fan being able to see the game grow within their own country. The Federation cares about the dollars, and they're following said dollars in the States.
Yeah, I remember when we were down in Mexico City and we were talking about if Azteca still pesa, right? If it still weighs, you talk about, well, they play games at night and the players aren't acclimated to the altitude and the stadium has changed and all those things are true. But the Mexican national team also plays a lot of its games in the United States. Yeah. So when it comes to those World Cup qualifiers, there is a distance, there is a separation between the national team and its fans. And I think that's not good. That's not good for anybody involved there. I think this definitely leads us to more MLS Liga MX business, right? Because we know the Federation is run by the Liga MX owners and the MLS owners are the ones in charge of Soccer United marketing. So we're definitely going to see more of that. I'm with you, though. I was surprised, very surprised to see this in context of what's happened with the U.S. Soccer Federation, because the U.S. Soccer Federation has had this deal with Soccer United marketing. And they're saying now, U.S. Soccer, that, hey, we think going out on our own, we can maximize our rights.
Good news for the Mexican women?
Why is it, Herc, that Mexico doesn't think they can do that, that the Mexican Federation doesn't think they can do that on their own, and they need Soccer United marketing? I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer.
Same reason they want to team up with Liga MX.
Ah.
Or Major League Soccer.
There it is. All right. Plenty more Football Americas in podcast form. We will be back on Thursday working on a very special guest with ties to the Mexican national team. We'll see you then.